Greetings, everybody. A student of the Bible will know there are lots of miracles in the Bible, large and small miracles. And as we started our song service today, I was surprised the first song that was picked, it was about miracles. And it's, when I say large and small miracles, actually the term small miracles is, what's the word, oxymoronic. So it's like saying deafening silence or bittersweet. So small miracle, it's still a miracle. What exactly is a small miracle? Have you thought about how many miracles are recorded in the pages of the Bible and what they mean to us? Have you just ever kind of analyzed them? And there are lots of them. Is Jesus Christ just showing off when he did miracles? It was God just showing off in the Old Testament? Hebrews 13:8 says that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And you need to remember that when it comes to miracles, because he doesn't change. He has not changed. He performed miracles in the Old Testament. He performed miracles in the New Testament. And he performs miracles today. And sometimes we have the eyes to see them, and sometimes we don't. Lamentations 3, if you'll turn there. I was reading in the Bible about a month ago, and I came across a really small miracle. Again, what's a small miracle? But it was something that seemed rather minor. And now I can't find it because I've been researching the subject of miracles, and I've had so many miracles going through my head that I can't find the one that sparked the sermon topic. But that's okay. There are many, many miracles. If you look it up, and it's not hard to do on the internet, and it says there are 164 specific miracles in the Bible, and it leaves out various categories where God's intervention and God did things that they weren't necessarily a full-blown, what appeared to be a miracle. But when they hold Moses' hands up so that the Israelites can continue winning, that is not one of the miracles, but there is something going on. When holding hands up does not mean your army's going to win. So I'd say there's a miracle going on there, even if the people in the doing the counting didn't think so. So today's sermon is more of about us marveling at God and glorifying him for his greatness and searching his unique ways and giving him thanks for what he does. God is a God of miracles. And whether it be something that you can absolutely put your finger on and say, you know, did you lose your glasses and now you found them? You know, a lot of times those aren't miracles, but it is nice when God does open your eyes and you can find something that you can't see. And I think you have to give God the credit for that at that time. Don't be afraid of giving God thanks for the wonderful things that he does, even if it's finding your glasses or trying to find your car in the parking lot. Lamentations 3 and verse 22 says, Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I have hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. So that is one of our responsibilities, is to consider what's going on and to give God thanks and praise for the things that he does, things large and small. So I want to encourage us in this time that can be upsetting in many ways, when people have personal tragedies, when cities have tragedies and firefighters have tragedies, and things just aren't going the way we would like them to sometimes. Just remember that God is faithful and his goodness endures forever. And we don't ever have to doubt what God is doing and the fact that he is merciful and that his kingdom is coming and that there are good times and better times coming. and we don't have to worry that God doesn't know what he's doing. There will be hard times, and we have to, as it were, man up sometimes and work through those, but we have to give God the credit and the thanks for all that he does, all his part and all that he does. Psalms 40 and verse 5 says, "Many, O Lord, my God, are your wonderful works which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. If I would declare and speak of them, there are more than can be numbered." So it is something that God is in the business of doing. God is keeping a lot of things moving along here. He's got the whole universe. He's got the whole earth going on. He's got all the people. He's got his people, people that he's calling. He's working with a lot of people and a lot of things. And God is well able to take care of all those things. So today the topic is miracles. There are miracles that are great in nature. Some affect families. Some affect individuals. Some affected armies. Some affect people's minds, dreams, and visions, and things where God has worked with various people over the years. The list seems endless in the ways that God intervenes in human affairs. And so do not ever discount that. So small miracles is kind of what I'm focusing on. I'll skip creation week because that kind of seems like a big one. And I'll kind of skip the 10 plagues, the Exodus, and the Red Sea crossing. Those kind of seem like a fairly big thing. But there are many other miracles in the Bible that are unique and that I'm going to try to look at. We're going to go a little faster than normal today, but we're going to do a little bit of a broad brush. So in the Old Testament, there are about 83 specific miracles, and I'm just going to summarize them just to give us a flavor of how much variety God does when it comes to miracles. So in Exodus 15:23, and I'm just going to touch on these. You can write them down if you want, but there are lots of them, and we're not going to do all of them, so we're just going to talk about them just for a half a minute. So there were bitter waters, and so God has these people out in the wilderness, and the water, they're thirsty, and they come to water, and it's bitter. So why shouldn't God do something easy? He did the Red Sea. That wasn't too hard for him. He spoke the earth into existence. That didn't seem to be too hard for him. But waters being bitter, why wouldn't God do something easy? Instead, he shows Moses a tree and tells him to throw it in the water. Why did he do that? Why would God come up with something that seems kind of off the wall? I don't know, because God said so. Moses, chuck that tree into the water. Just do what I tell you. So Moses had to do something. He had to do exactly what God told him. Other times, Moses didn't do exactly what God told him, and it didn't go so well. So later we come to number 16 and the sad account of Korah's rebellion. So Korah and his friends rebelled, and God didn't just take it. You know, a lot of people had rebelled before that point, but this was specific, and so God was upset, and they were challenging God and challenging his authority, and they told Moses, "You take too much on yourself. We're just as good as you." And they had many other harsh words towards Moses and God's authority. So God said, "All right, all of you men and families, just come right out, stand in front of your tent." God just opened the earth up and swallowed them all. It's like, wow. Like, he didn't ask them to repent. He just swallowed them up. It was done deal. And so that kind of thing is stunning to me that God's a God of mercy. Why didn't he give him a second chance? Well, maybe he did. And so it's a warning to all those that read it that God puts people where he wants them. He puts them in authority, and it's not up to the people to tell God what to do. 1 Samuel 5. Now, this is the account of the idol Dagon that they brought the Ark of the Covenant, and they parked it in wherever Dagon was hanging out, and they come up the next morning, and Dagon is face down in front of the Ark. Well, that's kind of weird. So they stand it back up, and the next night the same thing happens, and this time his head fell off, and his head and his hands broke off, and not only that, God is striking the people with tumors, and so they move the ark over to another city, and he strikes them with tumors, and he makes their lives miserable. So they send it they try to send it to Ekron, and Ekron says, "No way, we're not bringing that thing over here." And at the point that when I read it, I get God cares how we deal with the holy and the profane, and that we are not to deal with the profane. We should not be in the land of the pagans. We should be doing things that are pleasing to God and that are holy before Him. Certainly, there are accounts like Elijah encountering the poor widow and having just enough bread and or flour and oil to keep the family, her and her son, going, and then God allows her son to die, and so Elijah begs God to restore life, which He does, and so just a kind of a strange little miracle, but God has a point in what He does. So I don't know exactly what the point is sometimes, but God does, and maybe the point was to Elijah that he needed to do things in a certain way. One that is somewhat, I don't want to call it humorous, but 1 Kings 18 is where Elijah is trying to be a weather forecaster. And he tells his servant to go out and he says it's going to rain, and he sends him out, and on the seventh time, it does rain. And so he was right, it's going to rain. And so the weather forecasters are still doing that today. So, you know, we have to be patient. We have to understand God's timing is not our timing, and we get in a big hurry sometimes, and God wants us to be patient. God's timing is not public information. He will do it when He sees that it's time and it's ready, and then He can take care of our needs. 2 Kings 6 and verse 5 is Elisha and the floating axe head. And so for fair, honorable reasons, this axe head ended up coming off, and it went in the river, and it went to the bottom like all iron axe heads would. And they come to, a young man comes to Elisha and, you know, explains the situation. And the solution was that Elisha cut off a stick and threw it in the water, and the axe head floated to the surface. I don't know if you've ever tried that, but it doesn't work. And you know, why would God do that? Why would God supersede the laws of physics for the sake of an axe head? Well, if you read backwards in the story just a little bit, who was there? So Elisha was there. Who was there? Who was there was the sons of the prophets. It was probably a school where they were teaching young men about God, and so what better way to understand God to see that God works in mysterious ways sometimes, and so God is able to intervene even in the smallest, most unique, who would have thunk it, situations. God is able to intervene. The simplest matters, and know that that's still true today. So whether is your glasses, or whether you're lost in a city, or whatever the situation is, remember that God is marvelous and wonderful, and He can inspire you, and He can and help you in whatever your situation is. God is concerned about small things. 2 Kings 6 is Ben-Hadad's war plans were being revealed to the enemy. Ben-Hadad was concerned, like, who's the traitor in this company of soldiers? And someone tells him, Elisha knows what Ben-Hadad says in his bedroom. So God is telling Elisha, what's going on. And then Elisha tells the king of Israel, and it's kind of confusing for the poor guy. You know, he's kind of pre-electronics, and God is talking to Elisha and doesn't even have a cell phone. So when you're on God's side, it's hard to lose. So we need to make sure that we're doing those things that would be pleasing to God, so we are on his side. So Judges 6 talks about Gideon and his fleece. People doubt and they want to test God, and sometimes God humors them and says, all right, turn the fleece over and let's make it dry this side and wet on that side. And so, you know, your faith sometimes needs a little encouragement, and it seems that God was able to do that with Gideon, and Gideon went on to do some good things for God and was obedient. Joshua 10 is a story about Joshua telling the sun to stand still. So he said, sun, stand still. So try it. Go outside, tell the sun to stand still. It's probably not going to work. But God allowed that command to be performed. Joshua didn't make the sun stand still. God made the sun stand still. He's the one who has control of the moon. How? Why did he do it? I don't know. But it allowed them to go ahead and finish mopping up the enemy that they were fighting at the time. And then God aided them a little bit on that one too. He was dropping hailstones on them, and the hailstones were killing more than the soldiers got. So God works in mysterious ways, and you should not demand that God works your way. You can ask and pray and ask for help, but God's going to do what he's going to do. One that I question is why God fed Elijah with ravens. I guess it worked. So I don't know what they brought him, maybe worms or maybe cherries. I'm not sure. So my story this week is we were picking cherries, and when we got done, the birds were, they couldn't wait to come in and take over again. So one bird landed, picked up a cherry, and took off running across the yard and went over in the corner and ate his cherry. So it was funny. Hezekiah in 2 Kings 20 wanted a sign from God about him being healed. And so God says, all right, do you want the sun to go forwards or backwards 10 degrees? And he says, well, I want it to go back 10 degrees. So God did. And he just put the universe on hold and backed it up. And why would you do that, God? Well, I don't know. God has a sense of humor. Of course, you can talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, not as small thing to them that God saved them from the fiery furnace. And it's not a small thing that he saved Daniel in the lion's den. And we make wonderful children's stories out of so many of these miracles, and just don't forget who's behind them, and that it is not just a children's story. It's not something that Hollywood dreams up. So how could anyone have predicted how God would have intervened in any of these circumstances? You know, the axe head goes in the water. God could have created six more and had them laying there on the bank, or Amazon could have delivered same day delivery. But that's not the way God works. So God was never unable to accomplish his will in each situation. God was never unable to accomplish his will. Double negative. He always gets the job done the way he needs to get it done. Nothing has changed. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. and we have to remember that. So in the New Testament, Jesus Christ is on the earth. He's doing an extraordinary number of miracles. Turn to John 2. John 2, and we'll get a glimpse of this. John 2 and verse 11. He's just turned the water into wine. And this is the beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee. John 2, verse 11. And manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So if a guy walks into town and says, hey, I'm Jesus Christ, he better have something to back it up with. And Jesus did. He did walk into town and says, I'm that guy. And he was able to back it up with miracles that were only possible because of who he was and who was behind him, who was his Father in heaven. John 11 is the account of, in verse 3, this is the account of Lazarus. He's died, and Mary and Martha were having a hard time. In verse 3, therefore the sister sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. And Jesus said, in verse 4, when Jesus heard that, he said, the sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So Jesus did these things so that the Father could be glorified, and that in turn he is glorified. So miracles are for the glory of God, to make sure that we understand how wonderful and how praiseworthy God is, and we should never forget that. In Matthew 11, verse 4, it says, Jesus answered and said to them, go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind see, and the lame walk, and the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised, and the poor have the kingdom, or have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended because of me. So Jesus had specific reasons for doing the things that he did and for the miracles. Miracles allowed him to demonstrate his power and to convict the naysayers. They authenticated who he said he was. Now, elsewhere in the New Testament, cruising forward to Acts 12, Peter is... Acts 12, 5, Peter is supernaturally freed from prison. The chains just fall off. The apostles perform many miracles, and one that I don't recall Jesus doing was that people were healed when Peter's shadow passed over them. There must have been a lot of sick people back then, because Jesus did a lot of healing. The disciples did a lot of healing. There was just a... They did not have the medical professionals and the medicine opportunities that we do nowadays, but they were very thankful for the miracles that Jesus and the disciples were able to do. There are sad miracles of, like, Annas and Sapphira. I think I said that right. Ananias and Sapphira, and lying to God, or lying in their heart, and God knew, and God knows what's going on in our heart, and He doesn't shy away from taking action sometimes. And God's not to be mocked. We just have to be careful how we deal with God. So Acts 28 is where Paul gets snake bit, and the poisonous snake had no effect on him. And he throws the firewood in the fire, and the snake comes out and bites him, and he's got the thing hanging from his hand, and he shook off the creature into the fire and suffered no harm. However, they were expecting, the people sitting around were expecting, that he would swell up or suddenly fall down dead. But after they had looked for a long time and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said that he must be a god. So, you know, not necessarily a humorous situation, because they were probably scared for him the fact that, you know, watching a guy die from a snake bite would not be very nice. So Webster's definition of a miracle is an event or effect in the physical world deviating from the laws of nature or transcending our knowledge of these laws. It's an extraordinary, anomalous, or abnormal event brought about by a superhuman agency, or in other words, God. They're answers that cannot be attributed to ordinary, normal causes. It's produced by the agency of God through one of his representatives and attests to his message. When we look around, and we know who the Creator is, and then we know about miracles. So it's like, what's natural versus supernatural? What did God do supernaturally? What did he step in and do versus what he does every day? It's like God is the one that is keeping this whole thing going. And then he does something special and he supersedes and goes above and beyond what he has already been doing. So the feature of a miracle is that it's a work wrought by a divine power for a divine purpose by means beyond the reach of a man. So this made me think about when Moses went into Pharaoh and Moses threw his rod down and it became a snake, and then the sorcerers and magicians from Pharaoh were able to do the same thing, and they were able to do the same thing for snakes and changing the water to blood and making frogs appear, and that was it. They couldn't do any more. Moses was doing the miracles, and the magicians were doing magic. They were pulling rabbits out of hats, and there was a limit to that. So God's work, God's miracles are not magic. I've recently, I don't know, in the past months, I've seen some of these talent shows on TV where somebody comes out and they're doing these incredible magic tricks. I'm like, you know, I'm not even going to watch this because it's nonsense, and I don't care how they do it. I don't know if they're delving in the spirit world, but it does not make sense, and I'm not going to sit there and get all enamored by what somebody is doing that they're trying to copy God, and it doesn't work very well. So they've practiced this trick hundreds of times, and they're able to do it with such skill. And God doesn't need practice. God does it once. It's one and done. And that's the way I like miracles to happen. Many of the miracles are in the New Testament are acts of mercy towards a suffering humanity, and it's a confirmation of Jesus' divine commission and his teachings. Jesus did miracles that the disciples could not do, like the apostles healed, they cast out demons, but they could not make water into wine, and they couldn't walk on water, things like that. Jesus could do it, but the disciples couldn't, the apostles couldn't. So he proved he had total command over any part of nature that he wanted, over the components that make up men, being able to cast out demons and to work with things that are beyond the scope of man's ability to deal with. The Bible miracles go far beyond pulling rabbits out of hats and other sleight of hand tricks. Christ didn't do miracles for entertainment. He didn't do them to win a bet. He did them because he loved them, and because he was trying to show who he was, and he had purpose for doing them. They manifested the supremacy of his deity and made known the kingdom of God for the sake of the believers, for the sake of the unbelievers and the believers. Miracles show us that God, as creator and sustainer, he can adjust his laws. He can suspend them. He can change them as he sees fit. But he will never break his laws. And he will never sin in the process of adjusting that law. I thought about the rainbow and how God has changed something. There used to not be a rainbow, and now there is. So God changed something in the natural law, and the outcome has changed from the original, and it's something that he can control. He can take care of it. It's according to his will, and God is not in some kind of a straitjacket that he can't change anything. So that's certainly helpful. Miracles are involved in prophecy, and when God foretells the various kingdoms, like in Daniel, when various kingdoms are to be set up, and something has to take place to get that to happen. It doesn't just, that's not natural, something natural law that, you know, the right people are born and the right people are raised up. God is intervening. He's orchestrating these things, and he's able to see into the future, you know, the 10 toes and the governments and all these things. Imagine a Bible without miracles. How would we understand that what God says is real? It would just be a dry book of do's and don'ts. So miracles are like the signature of God, an official and authoritative seal of God. He's saying, I'm watching, I'm involved, I care. So God is able to do that. I want to go back to Daniel 2 and pick up a statement, Daniel 2 and verse 20. I'll give you time to get there. Daniel 2 and verse 20. So many things in this world don't appear to be what they are. Like we can't see what's going on behind the scenes. There's a whole spirit world going on, and we are down here in the physical realm, and there are things that we don't know and don't understand. Daniel 2 and verse 20, Daniel answered and said, he answered God and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever. This is after the king wanted his dream interpreted. Blessed be the name of our God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. So the key verse there is verse 21, that he removes kings and sets up kings. And so how much of what goes on in this world today is something that God is, again, orchestrating, and he has complete control over, and he knows exactly what's going on, and we don't have to worry that God is uninformed, that didn't he read the reviews? You know, like, oh, come on. You know, like, why would he do that? Well, he sets them up. He gives wisdom. He's the one that's handing out the wisdom. He gives knowledge. He's the one that reveals the secret things. We don't have to worry that God doesn't know what he's doing. Job 12:23 says he makes nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations and guides them. So miracles show God's ability to intervene in ordinary and mundane things. They encourage and strengthen faith of those that they're done for. They proclaim awe for the supreme life giver and creator of everything we can experience with our limited abilities. They show God isn't unaware of whatever we individually are going through. God knows what we're going through, and he allows it. He's all-knowing. He's all-powerful. He's all-present, and Just because he doesn't jump and at our beck and call doesn't mean that he's not watching and unaware. You know, yesterday was July 4th, and July 4th is the date in American history that is known for the approval of the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776. The declaration wasn't signed until sometime after that because they didn't have DocuSign to send around to all the different colonies. Most of us know it as the day when fireworks go off for an annoyingly long time, and it's the first big holiday of the summer. So I tried to think back in my memory of early childhood, early school days, and how much American history I've had, and I don't know. I don't think I had very much, but I certainly don't recall most of what I had. So it was interesting to go view the movie that was out recently called The American Miracle, Our Nation is No Accident. It was inspired by the book The American Miracle, Divine Providence in the Rise of the Republic, and it's written by Michael Medved. Now, you might be familiar with Michael Medved because he has a history of doing deep dives into the Bible stories to prove whether those things were so. And he's been interviewed on Beyond Today, UCG, various United occurrences where he's been able to give his opinion. He's an investigative filmmaker, and his programs are readily available on UCG.org. You just type in Medved, M-E-D-V-E-D, and you can see some of those interviews. The movie is still available in various forms, although it only played for 3 days. I recommend it. It comes highly recommended. It's got a lot of history and it would appear to be very factual. He's a prolific writer, Michael Medved. Many of his books deal with America and our beginnings. And when we went to see the movie, I was saddened by the what I would call lack of interest. We were in the movie theater, a prominent movie theater, midweek, a decent time of showing, and there were maybe a dozen other people in the theater. And I'm like, this is, you know, a unique movie about American history, and so few people care about it. They're busy doing other things. So I'm reading the book now. It's enlightening and encouraging to see the evidence of the early Americans and the importance of providence and the hand of God in establishing this country. So there were many miracles recorded in our fledgling start. And I've heard this over the years, like, oh, you know, God helped, of course God helped raise this country. But this movie and the book brings out the how weather played a role in various battles, storms and rain and snow, untimely fog and mud and things that only God could intervene and do. Whether he gets the credit for it is another thing. You have to look into it and analyze the situation to see that. But definitely, the battle should have been won by the British. All of the Americans should have absolutely lost, and they didn't, because God was behind it and God had a plan in mind. There were miracles regarding the life of George Washington when those around him were being killed. I think in one battle, there were like 70 officers in the battle, and 69 of them were killed. And George Washington had 4 bullet holes in his clothes when he took them off, but he was able to do his job, and he wasn't hiding behind a bush somewhere. He was doing his job and leading, and somehow the bullets kept missing him. And so there were situations like that it was obvious to those people at that time that he had divine protection. And this book, I would say, is it had like 12 pages of bibliography. So, and they went back years and years back to, you know, the oldest records available. I think it's very well researched, and I think he knows what he's talking about. There was a lot of focus in the early days of the country on providence. The early leaders were not card-carrying members of the Church of God. They were carnal people doing what they felt strongly about, and God was blessing their efforts. But God did a work through them. And the movie highlighted the difficulty that they had of setting up government in this country, and how trying to get fair representation and rights of various people of everybody. We spent a lot of time in the planning stage for the country. So, again, very, very interesting movie and a very interesting book. What God has given us has allowed the work of God to be done in a greater way than ever before in any other country, all by God's hand. I would like to read the epigraph from Franklin and Washington. So this is by Ben Franklin. He says, "I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, it is improbable that an empire can rise without his aid." That was from June 1787, Ben Franklin. And George Washington, in his first inaugural address, said, "No people can be bound to knowledge and adore the invisible hand of that." I'm sorry. "No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than those of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency." So you have to wrap your mind around what the words are saying, but he's saying this couldn't have been done without God's help. God is the one that did this, not the men. And the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence says, "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge." So the signers of the Declaration of Independence, again, acknowledging the idea of providence, that God is involved in matters. So God is leading. God is the one in charge. He knows what's going on. So don't underestimate the love and care that God has for you, and don't be surprised when God works something out in your life that you really had no control over, and you can see that you didn't do this on your own power, that God did it for you. Make sure that you thank God for that and give him the glory, because he likes to do that. He does do small miracles, even though miracles are not small. Give thanks to him, give honor and glory, and don't forget where it comes from. God does miracles for a purpose, and that purpose may not be evident. And God isn't bound to explain everything he does. He does them out of his love, his mercy, and for reasons we probably won't know in this life. When we consider his ways and abilities and his history with mankind as recorded in the Bible, nothing is too great or too small to escape his attention. And for that, he can be praised. God is always able to intervene in each situation. God will get done what he intends according to his perfect will. Nothing has changed. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And let me quote Deuteronomy 7:21, as Moses prepared the people mentally for the challenges they would have in the Promised Land, and as we prepare for the challenges that will come our way in the future, remember what kind of a God we serve. Verse Deuteronomy 7:21, breaking into it, it says, "For the Lord your God, the great and awesome God, is among you."